I want to talk today about the kind of people that God needs. We hear a lot about that. We hear a lot about great men and great ministries. We hear a lot about needing God to raise up great men. But our problem is fundamentally, we do not think properly. That is the cry, the crying need of God's people in all ages. I am stunned every time I read the account in 1 Samuel of Samuel's going to anoint David to be king. And as he comes in, he sees Jesse's sons, and he looks at them and says, "They're fine, strong men." And he goes to the one, "No, the second, no, 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 no." And he goes, "But God, they look so good." And God says, "You look on the outside, I look on the heart. Don't look with your eyes." And David comes in, and what's the next thing Samuel says? "Oh, he was a good-looking young man." And you're going, "Oh! Don't we ever get it?" And we don't. And in this day, it is desperately needed that some people get it. Because if we don't get it, there's no hope for the world. If the church is not brought to what it should be, the world has no hope. And so, as we look at this, will you turn with me to Exodus 3? Now, Moses was tending the flock of Jethro, his father-in-law, the priest of Midian. And he led the flock to the far side of the desert and came to Horeb, the mountain of God. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. So Moses thought, "I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up." When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, "Moses, Moses." Can I pause just? There's something, if you've never figured this out, there's a difference between men and women. And the first one is, women will be talking and talking and talking to their husbands, and the guy just doesn't hear a thing. God knows what he's doing. God always calls twice whenever he speaks to a man, "Moses, Moses," because God knows that men don't listen the first time. So ladies, if you want to save yourself a whole bunch of heartache, learn from God. Whenever you've got something to say, start out with, "Moses, Moses." Then you've got a shot at it. Just the second thing on that, you understand that God made men and women different. Women were gatherers. Men were hunters. Never send a man to find something that doesn't move, because if it's not trying to kill us, if it's not trying to run away from us, we can't see it. If it don't move, we don't see it. It can be sitting right, and we go, "Huh?" And you women, you know it's true, don't you? The last couple of weeks at school, I've been finding stuff for people. I'm going, the world must be way out of whack, because when a man's the one finding stuff, we're in trouble. God called to him from within the bush, said, "Moses, Moses." And Moses said, "Here I am." "Do not come any closer," God said. "Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground." Then he said, "I am the Lord, the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob." At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. The Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey, the home of the Canaanites, the Hittites, the Amorites, the Perizzites, the Hivites, and the Jebusites. And now, the cry of the Israelites has reached me. I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now, go! I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. But Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God said, "I will be with you, and this will be a sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God at this mountain." Moses said to God, "Suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' Then what shall I tell them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you will say to the Israelites: I am has sent you." Today we're looking for great people. We describe people as great people, great pastors, great leaders, great spiritual. God is not looking for great anything. First of all, because they simply do not exist. I want you to look at the great Moses. The great Moses was utterly unusable by God. Look with me back at Exodus 2, because Exodus 3 is the usable Moses. Exodus 2 is the great Moses. First of all, we learn about Moses in verse 10. Notice what it says in Exodus 2:10. It says, "When the child grew older," Moses grew older, "she took him," his mother, "took him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. She named him Moses, saying, 'I drew him out of the water.'" This is the great Moses, the Moses who is the grandchild of Pharaoh, the child of Pharaoh's daughter. We know that he was trained as an Egyptian, looked as an Egyptian, walked as an Egyptian, talked as an Egyptian. Because if we look at verse 17 in Exodus 2, notice what it says. We'll start at 15. Exodus 2:15. "When Pharaoh heard this, he tried to kill Moses, but Moses fled from Pharaoh and went to live in Midian, where he sat down by a well. Now a priest of Midian had seven daughters, and they came to draw water and fill the troughs to water their father's flock. Some shepherds," how many shepherds? So how many some? Is it one? If I walk in, there's a guy standing there, do I go, "Well, there's some people standing here"? Probably not even two, because two is what? A couple. I love this. I do this all the time with people. They'll say, "How many do you want?" And I go, "I want a couple." And they go, "What? Three, four?" And I go, "What does couple mean? I'm going on a date as a couple. Does that mean three or four?" And I guess today you've got to watch that, because not a couple, it's some. There's a group of them. And we know from ancient culture that shepherds didn't go singularly. You can't guard a flock alone. went in groups. There probably were at least four or five or six. There were more probably 10 or 12, a good-sized bunch of them. And notice what it says. It says, some shepherds came along and drove them away, but Moses got up and came to their rescue. So here's this guy all by himself, lounging there beside this well, taking a little siesta. If it had been the Old West, he'd have his hat. You know how they had their hat down over their eyes? And here comes this gang of ruffians. And you can picture the scene. Here's these ladies, and they're kind of, oh, what you doing getting water? Oh, you spilled it. Oh, isn't that a shame? Get out of here. This guy gets up all by himself, goes, gentlemen. And he drove them off. So we know about this Moses that he was one bad hombre. And he knew it. When he saw the oppression in Egypt of a Hebrew, what did he do? Did he tell the guy, and did he write the guy a nasty memo? Did he give him a real tongue lashing? Or did he whop off his head and drop it to the sand? We also know that Moses appeared as an Egyptian. Notice verse 18. When the girls returned to rule their father, he asked them, why have you returned so early today? They answered, what? An Egyptian rescued us from the shepherd. He obviously dressed as an Egyptian. He probably wore his hair as Egyptian royalty, which means he was shave-headed, perhaps with some kind of small decoration of hair in the back. Perhaps he was tattooed, as the Egyptians were skilled at doing. He looked like an Egyptian. He looked like a rich and powerful person. When that Moses tried to serve God, he failed utterly. It is clear that from the earliest days of Moses' life, God had put a calling into him. But having a calling is not enough. And we have so many people today that are running around, I'm called, and they go out and they start something in the power of their strength. And maybe it becomes big. And maybe it becomes powerful. But it isn't building the kingdom. Powerful Moses, mighty Moses, great Moses, could not serve God. When he tried to do what God had put in his heart. Remember what Hebrews says. Hebrews says Moses, when he came of age, did not allow himself to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, but instead chose mistreatment along with the people of God. From an early age, undoubtedly from his mother's training as an infant, God had put a calling on him. But he didn't know how to serve God. He didn't know the ways of God. And so he starts out to serve God in the ways of the Pharaoh. Something standing in your way, whop it down. And if you look at verses 11 to 15, Exodus 2, 11 to 15, one day after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were, and he watched them at their hard labor. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. Glancing this way and that and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. The next day he went out and saw two Hebrews fighting, and he asked the one in the wrong, "Why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew?" The man said, "Who made you ruler and judge over us?" Notice all of Moses' attempt to serve God in what he had learned at the feet of Pharaoh failed utterly. Do you know, 20-some years ago, back in the 90s, they said, you know, it's really important that the church grow and evangelize the world. We need to have a good plan to do that. So they started tours of pastors to go down to Disney World and learn from the executives at Disney World how to build an organization. Not satisfied to be called pastors today. Now we have to be the CEO of such and such ministry, the president and CEO. I've read the Bible pretty extensively. I've never heard the title president or CEO of a spiritual leader. We want to be like mighty Moses. We want to be like powerful Moses. We want to be like great Moses. But great Moses never won anything for the kingdom of God. Who was the strongest man that ever lived? The most militarily mighty judge in the history of Israel. The one superhero in the history of the human race. His name was Samson. And what did he accomplish for the kingdom of God? Nothing lasting. When Jesus said in John 6:63, the flesh profits for nothing. He didn't mean a little bit. When Jesus said in John 15:5, without me you can do nothing. He didn't mean a pretty good job. We need to understand in the Church of Jesus Christ that God's ways are not our ways. We don't need to learn from Madison Avenue. We don't need to learn from Disney World. We don't need to learn from some super executive that built a company to billions of dollars, unless that's what we want to do. If we want to build a business, then please, by all means, go to them. But Jesus said in Matthew 16:18, upon this rock, you will build my church, however you want to do it. I will build. I remember a pastor a number of years ago, and I've used this same thing ever since. People came to him and said, Pastor, the church ain't growing. He goes, I know that. And they said, well, what are you going to do about it? He goes, not my job. If Jesus told me to build the church, then I'd be really worried. Jesus said, that's his job. My job is to teach you the truth. Your job is to live it. God's job is to give the increase. There is not a farmer in the world that can make the crops grow. All you can do is plant and water. Only God can make it grow. I want to look at the three characteristics of the Moses that God could use. If the great Moses failed, what are the three characteristics of the God of the Moses God could use? So let's look at Exodus 3 to see what they are. First of all, he was an available Moses. Look with me at Exodus 3, verse 4. Exodus 3, verse 4. Now, I want you to notice something. God gave the burning bush. Did God call to Moses from the burning bush? Not initially. He simply set it where he could see it and waited for Moses to respond. Because notice what it says, verse 4, when the Lord saw that he had gone over to look. God will not drag you kicking and screaming to do His will. If you want to do your will, God will let you go. C.S. Lewis said at the end of time, there will only be two people in all of the universe. Those two people are those who bowed before God and said, "Your will be done." And those to whom God holds out His hand and says, "Your will be done." Only two kinds of people in eternity. God waited for Moses to come to Him. He gave him the drawing, but He waited for him to turn aside. Moses could have said, "Whoa, what a weird looking bush. I'm out of here." And you know what? We wouldn't be reading about a Moses anywhere in the Bible. But I want you to notice, when the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, "Moses, Moses." And Moses said, "Here I am." The most important attribute that you have that God needs is not your skill set. It's not your money. It's not your ability. It's not your intelligence. It's not your health. It's one simple thing: availability. Are you a person that is available to God? I heard a story about a young man years ago, got marvelously saved on the beach. So he started going to church. And he would just go to church night and day. And he would just sit in the secretary's office hours a day. Whenever he wasn't at work, he'd just sit there reading his Bible. And if there was someone available, he'd say, "Can you teach me some of the Bible today?" And if there wasn't, he'd just sit there. And whatever there was to do, "Hey, we got to get somebody to go to pick up a missionary at the airport who's flying in for a conference. Get him to do it. Hey, how about driving out to the airport?" "Yes, sir." And time went on. All he did was just sit there reading his Bible. Whenever somebody'd teach him learning. Whenever there was a mundane, "Hey, we need to vacuum the back part of the building. There's some people coming in and there's a mess." "Okay, I'll go do it." Available. One day they said, "Hey, there's a couple of kids here. They say there's a few kids that got saved on the beach and they need somebody to teach them a Bible study. He's been learning from us now for some years here. We're not available. Send him over." He goes, "Okay. How many kids are there, by the way?" "Oh, 100. You know who that person is? Greg Laurie. Available. Luke 1:38. What's Luke 1:38 say? Luke 1:38. Luke 1:38. Mary's just been told you are going to become a total pariah. You are probably going to lose your fiance. Your family is going to attack you. Your friends are going to mock you. You are going to be thought of universally within your entire town as one of those horrible words that used to mean something. And what's her response? I'm the Lord's servant. Do unto me even as you have said. Available. Available. At that point, Mary was maybe 3 or 4 years older than Summer. Maybe not that. Certainly younger than you are, Paige. Available to God. Number two. It's not enough to be available if we lack this one. Number two, this Moses was humble. The other Moses thought he was something special. This Moses was humble. Notice what it says, Exodus 3, verse 11. Exodus 3, 11. But Moses said to God, who am I? Moses said to God, who am I? One of the big problems we have is we believe our own press. We believe that we're just something special. Do you know why I think the story of Balaam is in the Bible? Because God wanted to drive through every one of us that all He needs is a jackass to speak. And until we figure that out, we don't get it. God doesn't need somebody great, but any old donkey will do. Who am I? Samuel said of Saul, there was a time when you were small in your own eyes. Sadly, when he's talking to Saul in 1 Samuel, that was no longer the case. Saul was no longer small in his own eyes, and his days of being used by God were over, and his end was written in tragedy. Judges 6:15. Unlike Samson, let me show you who I am. Judges 6:15. Another judge said, I am the least. First of all, I come from the smallest tribe. Second of all, I come from the smallest clan in that tribe. Third of all, I come from the smallest family in that clan. And I'm the least of all the people in that family. Who am I? His name was Gideon. The Apostle Paul, writing in Ephesians 3:8 says, I'm the least of the saints. You know, the nice thing about Paul is, and it's the reason that of all the human beings, perhaps other than Moses, that God used, there was no one that God used probably more than the Apostle Paul. And there are people that will tell you, even secular historians, that it is arguable that the Apostle Paul probably had the greatest impact on Western civilization of any human being there is. The longer Paul lived, the humbler he became. He writes to the Corinthians and says, I'm the least of the apostles. 6-7 years later, he writes to the Ephesians and says, I'm the least of the saints. Another 6-8 years later, he writes to Timothy and says, I'm the chief of sinners. I am sure that Paul didn't get worse empirically. His life was not characterized by more unholiness the longer it lived, but more by less unholiness, but more holiness. I'm really twisting that around, aren't I? His life was characterized by greater holiness the longer he lived. Yet he saw himself ever more as a failure that needed God to do it. He went from the least apostle to the greatest of sinners. He was not only available, he was humble. And third of all, he was teaching. The third characteristic that Moses had is he was teachable. Notice what it says. Verse 13 of Exodus 3. Exodus 3:13. Moses said to God, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, the God of your fathers has sent me to you, and they ask me, what is your name? What's he say? What shall I tell them? Now, the Moses of 40 years earlier, he didn't have a question of what to tell them. He knew exactly what to tell them. He had a plan. And you know, there are so many people, it blows my mind about how churches, you know, the first thing you have to do is have a mission statement. Really? You have to come up with a mission statement. So I guess God's isn't good enough. And number two, you have to have a plan of implementation. How many people in the New Testament had a plan of implementation? You know, the neat thing about following Christ is you're always running to catch up. You don't have to plan 10 steps ahead. You just need to follow behind Him because He always keeps moving. And the neat thing is, when Jesus is ahead of you, He opens the doors, doesn't He? What will I tell them? Would to God that more of us today were asking that question, what shall I tell them? What should I say? I love that passage in Acts. Paul's got his plan for world evangelism. He's in modern-day Turkey, and he's looking to evangelize the world. And so he goes, I'm going to go north. And God stopped him cold in his tracks. He goes, wow, that's weird. Oh, I'll go east. And God stopped him cold in his tracks. I'll go northeast. God stopped him cold in his tracks. And as he's standing there going, what is going on? He gets a vision of a person from Macedonia to the west, from Greece, going, come on this way. When I really began to think about that passage, it hit me that if the Apostle Paul couldn't make a plan that held up under God's scrutiny, what hope did I have of doing it? Jesus didn't say, my sheep are so smart, they come up with a great plan. What did Jesus say? My sheep hear my voice, and they follow. You've never been to Israel, you just don't get that. If you've ever been to Israel, you get it. Because growing up in America, I just was not prepared for what it's like in Israel. I mean, it is barren in a lot of Israel. When the Bible, do you understand what the Bible, and it's right there in that passage, God said, I'll send you to a land of milk and honey. Do you understand that people think, well, that's good stuff. No, those are two separate lands. And Israel is a land of milk and honey. There are two very distinct climates in Israel. There is the shore right along the Mediterranean Sea, the land of milk. And all the rains sweep in off the Mediterranean Sea, and it's green and watered, and you can graze cattle there, and you can have a land of milk. But then there's the mountains, at the top of which is Jerusalem. They're not really tall. They're only about, 1,500, 2,000 feet. But they're high enough that they cause almost all the water to fall on the west side of them. And when you go over them, storms never get over them. And on the east side of that range of mountains, it's desert. The moon doesn't look any more barren than it looks there. I mean, it is Crater City. One rainstorm a year, maybe. One. The land of honey. The land of wild locusts and eating insects. But you know, sheep thrive there because, man, they can just get down and they can get that little short grass in their teeth and they can haul it up. And right to our present day, Bedouins still live in tents out there. It's cute to see their camps because they'll have a school bus with the tent all attached to the school bus. Some other kind of hybrid like that. And you'll watch these shepherds running through along, and you'll see them with their staff, and they will literally be running along these cliffs that are like this, on these little narrow paths that, I mean, a mountain goat shouldn't be able to walk on that thing. And there they go, fum, 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 fum. And it's always flop, 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 flop. Flop, 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 flop. 2 feet in a cane and a staff. 2 feet in a staff. 2 feet in a staff. And right behind them come these sheep bouncing. Boingity, 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 boingity. Jesus said, my sheep hear my voice and they follow me. Jesus isn't in the business of making intelligent sheep who can do it on their own. Jesus is looking for sheep who are available. I want to close with one thought. Oh, my goodness. I want to close with one thought, and then we're done. And here's that thought. I want you to contrast two possible things, neither of which God did. But I want you to think about, just to take things out to the extreme so we see where we ought to be. What would the world look like today? Jesus said, go therefore, because all authority is given to me, go therefore and make disciples of all nations. And lo, I am with you always, even to the end of the age. Isn't that what Jesus said? I want you to picture if Jesus had said it differently. If Jesus would have said, hey, guys, I've given you all the training you need. Go out there and do it. Do the best you can. Get on it. I'll see you when I return. What kind of shape would the world be in today if that's what God would have done? Left us on our own, walked away, and told us to do it. Now, I want you to contrast that to the opposite end of that spectrum. And that is if God had said, you know, you people just really never get it. You haven't gotten it for 2,000 years of Israel's history. You didn't get it in Moses' day. You didn't get it in Noah's day. You didn't get it in Abraham's day. You never get it. Here's, step aside. I'm going to do it all on my own. I'm going to reach the world. How long would it have taken God to reach the world without us? He would have done it in a snap, wouldn't he? We wouldn't even be started if he'd have left us on our own. So which do you think we ought to be leaning towards? Letting God use us to do it, or doing it on our own? If God can do it, then shouldn't we be allowing him to? Because here's the truth. God has linked himself to us. Didn't say, I'll do it on my own. He said, whatever you bind on earth will be bound. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed. He said, I'm holding back my kingdom to exactly the pace you go. Will you be my junior partner? Let's bow together. Lord, as we consider this mighty Moses and this empty Moses, we see very clearly in this hour when your people are oppressed not only by the world but also by the weight of false teaching and false ideas and worldliness that has accumulated among your people. Oh God, we need people who are not great, but simply available and humble and teachable. Lord, I pray that you would work in our hearts to make us people that you can do that. In Jesus' name.